Hi, this is Tom Winifrith with my fifth podcast on the coronavirus epidemic and the response of our government to it, a response driven by groupthink, whipped up by an angry mob. I suppose I should preface this podcast with a couple of remarks, because this podcast is about the NHS, about the manipulation of data, the suppression of truth and fact, something which is very common when one encounters a groupthink mentality. I should preface it by saying that I admire people working in the NHS. One of the problems with groupthink is that anyone who dissents is immediately attacked, and I've had some pretty nasty comments made to me by people attacking you not only for what you say, but also for things that you don't say, just making wild assumptions. So I don't despise those folks who work in the NHS. I admire them. My sister T is working as a GP. She will be encountering people with coronavirus on a daily basis, and I admire her for her work, although not some of her views. My young cousin H is married to a gentleman called Rana, who's a top guy. Normally he's a heart surgeon, but these days he's not doing much heart surgery. He's gone back on the wards tackling people, tackling coronavirus. And again, I admire Rana. I've always admired Rana, a top man, greatly for his bravery and for his work. And of course, I admire the carers who are looking after my father. They're not employed by the NHS. They are nonetheless health workers, and they are doing a sterling job. So I have family involved in this battle, and I admire all those who are working in the health service. So let's get that straight. And secondly, I don't trivialise the deaths. The death of any loved one through any circumstances is an appalling thing to go through. So I always feel sorry for folks who lose a loved one, whatever the reason for that loss. This is something that I don't cope particularly well with, and I understand it. But that shouldn't mean that we are not allowed to criticise both the government's response to coronavirus and also certain aspects of the health service. We are told that the health service is the envy of the world, and we're not allowed to criticise it as such. There are good reasons to criticise the NHS. We have incidents like Dr. Shipman, who murdered hundreds of his patients, the Mid-Staffordshire crisis, scandal of baby deaths at Bristol Hospital. We have these things occurring regularly, and those should make us question the NHS to some extent. The vast amounts of money is spent on the NHS, and it employs 1.5 million people in the UK. Something like 2.5% of the working population work for the NHS. And I would suggest to you that there is some evidence that it is not exactly the most efficient organisation on this planet. Not all of the money we spend on the NHS is spent wisely. I was intrigued to see an article in the Daily Mirror the other day about how the racial awareness and campaigning coordinator at the Brighton NHS Trust had lost an unfair dismissal claim. Oddly enough, she was done for racial harassment and also harassing a female employee on account of her sexuality. I don't really care about the sort of irony of that story. What amazes me is that this woman was being paid £100,000 a year. And I'm afraid the NHS has far too many people doing non-frontline jobs and being paid a very large salary. There are efficiencies that could be found in the NHS which are not found. I think another example of the inefficiencies of the NHS is the delivery of PPE, personal protective equipment, to frontline staff, both within the NHS and care homes. This is something the NHS was meant to organise, largely through a body, Public Health England, which seems to have been remarkable in spending the past 4 years campaigning to stop us drinking Coca-Cola, but really was not up to the job. There has been a notable inefficiencies in the delivery of vital equipment to the health service. It is now apparently all getting through, or largely getting through, as the army has been brought in. It doesn't say a lot for the organisation of the health service that this was a problem. We were told that we had to take a lot of measures as part of the lockdown in order to protect the NHS, to protect it from being swamped with too many patients. We were told by the experts that the peak number of patients would be in the weekend just gone, Easter weekend. On that basis, we have spent an absolute fortune as a nation building new Nightingale hospitals, 4,000 beds in London's Docklands, another 4,000 beds is it in Birmingham, 2,000 in Manchester. We've converted the Principality Stadium in Wales, in Cardiff, and numerous other venues around Wales where I live, and similar efforts have taken place in Scotland. Yet last weekend, the so-called peak weekend, and I suspect the peak weekend may be next weekend or the weekend after, we're pretty close to peak, no hospital in London, which is the epicentre of coronavirus in the UK, had capacity utilisation greater than 80%. Okay, the hospitals have worked very hard and done admirable work to expand their capacity in ICU by bringing operating theatres into use as intensive care beds. But with that effort, no hospital was at over 80% in London. In other places in the country, the numbers were way below 80%. At the Nightingale Hospital, there are now just 19 patients. By the time some of the hospitals, the overflow hospitals up here in North Wales, are completed in a few weeks' time, I would imagine there will be no need for them whatsoever. Does this necessarily suggest that the NHS is great at prediction or indeed efficient in utilising resources? One of the other issues that has come through during the current crisis has been the issue of testing. Now, anyone who has watched general election campaigns over the past few years has known that one of the key battlegrounds has been the issue of privatising various parts of the NHS. Oddly enough, that was something that was started under a Labour government, but both parties have done a little bit of privatisation at the edges. But the Labour Party consistently tells us, and health unions consistently tell us, you must not privatise parts of the NHS. The NHS is not for sale. They do so on largely ideological grounds. They don't just discuss what is the most efficient way of delivering certain services. In Germany, testing is in the private sector. It was privatised. It's not part of a national state-run healthcare provider. Germany is already providing 50,000 tests per day and has been doing so for quite some time. Over in Britain, we left it to the NHS, and we have just about got up to 15,000 tests per day for coronavirus. There will be a big increase in the number of tests, but that's largely through the private sector. GlaxoSmithKline on its own is likely to be doing 30,000 tests per day within a couple of weeks. So the odd thing here is that our fixation within the NHS of doing as many things within the NHS as possible and not using the private sector has actually restricted our ability to track the spread of coronavirus in an efficient manner. No doubt when this is all over, we'll go back to the old battle lines with people saying the NHS is not for sale. You mustn't attack the NHS. It's a sacred cow, even though the clear evidence with regard to testing is that it's not necessarily the best way forward. Perhaps the best example is here in Wales, where the Welsh Government, which is a bureaucratic monolith wedded to the idea of the state providing everything, has made a complete and utter pig's ear of its testing programme, announcing targets which seemed ambitious and said they were doing far better than the government in England, and missing every target. I think last week we were running at something like 1,500 tests a day when it was promised that we would be at 15,000 a day. by the Welsh government. The problem is it is utterly wedded to the idea that the state must do everything. Belatedly, it's waking up to the idea that this is perhaps not the best thing to do. The hue and cry from the mob right now is that the government is failing because so many key health workers are dying as a result of the failure to provide personal protective equipment. If you listen to Piers Morgan, who leads the mob on groupthink, or if you watch Channel 4 News or BBC News, it is a regular feature. Health service workers are dying, and this is linked to a failure to provide PPE. It is just something which is stated without any doubt whatsoever, with no relation to actual facts. As far as I can see, there have been roughly 10,000 cases of people dying from coronavirus in the UK. The number may actually be a little bit higher due to unreported cases in nursing homes. It may be that the number is a little bit higher because there have been some people who've died of, with coronavirus and it's not been recorded. Or it could be a little bit lower and there have been some people who've died with coronavirus but have actually died of other things. We can argue the toss, but let's use a number of 10,000 as a rough approximation. The number of people who have died who are health service workers is, according to recent counts, about 25 to 30. Mm-hmm. But we have 1.5 million people working in the health service in the UK. That is, roughly speaking, 2.5% not of the working population. The working population, it's 5% of the working population, but it is 2.5% of the population as a whole. So you would have expected that there would be, roughly speaking, 250 health service workers dying. If it was the scandal, which the BBC and Channel 4 and Piers Morgan would say, you'd expect it to be far more because there'd be all these poor health service workers not given full PPE by the wicked Tories, by the wicked government, and therefore dropping like flies. But in fact, the number of health service workers dying seems to be only about 25, one in 10 of what it should be if indeed health service workers were dying in the numbers according to their spread amongst the general population. So in fact, far fewer health service workers are dying than there should be. Now, it could be, of course. What exactly is the scandal here? You may say that a lot of health service workers are young and people who are meant to die of coronavirus or who typically die are old. And indeed, that is the evidence. If one looks at the health service workers who died, and the BBC conveniently lists a number of them, you will see that many of them were in their 60s or 70s or very late 50s. In other words, they were people who were in the target demographic to be killed by coronavirus. A number of them were retired and had just come back into work, even though they were in high-risk categories, and you have to admire their bravery. But a number of them appeared not actually to have come into contact with any coronavirus patients directly as a result of their work. I look at Pooja Sharma. She was a pharmacist. She wasn't actually a frontline worker. Then I can look at another one. Arima... I'll get this right. Is it Arima Nazreem? She was indeed a nurse, age 36, but she'd been on annual leave since the start of the coronavirus outbreak and therefore never came into contact with any patients at all. The youngest of the health service workers to die was a 29-year-old, a real outlier. Rebecca Mack. Again, you feel terribly sorry for her and her family, but she, according to the BBC, didn't actually have any direct contact with coronavirus patients at all. She died on April 5th. So looking at the sample of those people working for the NHS who died, a number of them had no contact whatsoever with coronavirus patients. And therefore, they were just like the rest of us. They caught it from someone, we don't know who, and they got ill. And like very few people who catch coronavirus, they paid the ultimate penalty. The assertion of the mob, the assertion of groupthink, is that the government has not provided enough equipment. Therefore, health service workers have become infected. And therefore, too many of them have died and there is blood on the hands of Boris Johnson. It may be that some of the NHS workers who died did get infected at work. It may be, but there is no proof. Equally, they may have been infected by a family member. They may have been infected when they went to the local store, or if they were not observing social distancing before we were all observing social distancing. There is no evidence of a direct connection. If there was a scandal about NHS workers being killed in droves because of the lack of PPE equipment, because there are quite a large number of more elderly doctors and nurses going back into work, because there are quite a few NHS workers who do themselves have underlying health conditions, again, something mentioned in coverage of those who died, because of that, you would expect there to be far more NHS workers dying of coronavirus than have actually died. But that hasn't happened. It is an example of the mob, the groupthink herd, the groupthink mob whipping up a view and banging on about it time and time again. But if you look at the underlying data, there is nothing in the underlying data to justify their claims and beliefs. But dare to suggest it, and you're told you don't care about dying doctors, you don't care about the great work done by the NHS. I bet you didn't go out and applaud outside your front door last Thursday. Nothing should be the case. I'm just pointing out that the data does not justify the claims made by supporters of the NHS. There is one other aspect of the NHS and data which perhaps people might want to consider. Last week, the number of deaths in the UK was around 16,000, which is about 6,000 higher than it should have been. I'll come to examining that data and why it doesn't necessarily mean that our treatment of coronavirus, the government's response to coronavirus, has been correct in a subsequent podcast. What is interesting about that data is that about 3,500 of those surplus 6,000 deaths were down to coronavirus. The other 2,500 weren't. Now, it's possible that one or two of those people, or more than one or two, that some of those 2,500 did in fact have coronavirus and it just wasn't recorded in the post-mortem. But it also looks exceedingly likely that a large number of those 2,500 didn't have coronavirus and died before their time because of something else that's happening. There was a doctor being interviewed on the television the other day who normally treats people for sepsis, a disease which is potentially fatal. Normally, he says he has about one person a week as a new admission, an urgent case in his ward. Since the start of the coronavirus epidemic, he's had none whatsoever. We've seen accident and emergency units completely empty. We've seen utilisation of non-coronavirus wards at way below normal levels. People are terrified of going into hospital lest they catch coronavirus or lest they put an undue strain on the NHS. Because you see, we've been told the NHS is going to be swamped. That's why we have to build all these Nightingale hospitals everywhere. Of course, these hospitals are completely empty, but that's what we've been told by our leaders. And anyone who challenges the wisdom of it, dares to challenge the groupthink, is once again told they want old people to die and they don't care about the NHS. The response, though, has been, one might suspect, that quite a lot of people who are seriously ill with non-COVID diseases are not burdening the NHS out of a sense of selflessness, or are not burdening the NHS because they're terrified of catching COVID, and as a result are dying of other disease. That is an unintended consequence. But again, to raise that and to question the government's approach dares to challenge the groupthink. And you know what happens to people who do that. I will address the issue of the increased number of deaths and of the government's response in a subsequent podcast, which I would look to record in the next 24 hours. I will speak to you then. Meanwhile, I do suggest, if you're looking for a little bit of light reading during the lockdown, you might consider Groupthink by my late uncle, Christopher Booker. Read that and you might just view our reaction to the coronavirus epidemic in a whole new light. I'll speak to you soon.